Keep It is brought to you by Built. Whether you're renting or paying a mortgage, one of your biggest monthly expenses should be working harder for you. That's where Built comes in. Built is the membership for where you live that rewards you with points on every housing payment, wherever you live. Built started out rewarding members on their rent. Now, as of 2026, Built members can also earn points on mortgage payments wherever they live. Every housing payment earns you points you can use towards flights with top travel partners like United and Hyatt, Lyft rides, Amazon.com purchases, and so much more. Personally, I'd redeem my points for rent credit, fitness classes, and Lyft rides. Lyft rides. Remember when they used to have the mustaches and you'd be like, I'm in a big car with a mustache right now. And then they all had a meeting and they said, what if we took the mustaches away? And now I use Lyft all the time. But you can also use Built points for down payments on a home, Amazon, gift cards at 120 plus brands, member only experiences, student loan balances, select restaurants, and the Built home collection. But here's what I think is the most underrated part. Built members also get access to a neighborhood concierge. It can make restaurant reservations, book fitness classes, and find new local spots, all while being rewarded at more than 45,000 merchant partners. It's like having a personal assistant baked into where you live. It's simple. Being a renter and now owning a home is better with Built. Join the membership for where you live at joinbuilt.com/keepit. That's joinbuilt.com/keepit. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Louis Fertel. I thought we'd have a great episode today, so I thought, why don't we have Guy Branum back? Hi, Guy.
Hello, good to be here. Always a pleasure to be at Keep It.
I always get real animated with you. I can't explain why. I think it's that you know everything, and that excites me.
We like to talk about the same things, and that's fun.
Yes. No, yes. Again, we will be doing this whether or not we're recording. It's actually not fair to monetize what we do.
Yes, but the thing is we're both busier now than we were 10 years ago, and so we find ourselves at Akbar having these conversations less.
Yes. Speaking of being busy, you were just at the Stop That Train premiere, which is the new RuPaul movie directed by our friend Adam Shankman.
Yes.
It's one of these, it's mocking old disaster movies of yore, the Irwin Allen movies, which were star-studded.
Right.
And so every queer person of note is in this movie.
No, it was really exciting. I mean, the best thing about it was just not being excluded, you know, if everyone is going to be there. But, like, it's got, you know, Jujubee and Ginger Minj are the stars. You have so many amazing queens from Drag Race, and then you have so many amazing queer comedians like Drew Droege, and then you have so many like straight comedians who came to play like Paul Scheer and June Diane Raphael. Like, it's so much fun, and it's about a Stormaganza and a runaway train and the possibility of a Hotel for Dogs and Laurie Metcalf being killed at the end.
Yeah. Okay. See, now you're going to see that movie, right?
Yes.
But
do you think a comedy in the theaters, can it work anymore? Is it technology we've lost, like Roman Concrete?
That's right. Well, I keep thinking about the world's greatest comedy, Anyone But You, which we all saw in a theater. And you can't deny those numbers, Guy. Truly, what was the last blockbuster comedy that we all saw? Like The Devil Wears Prada 2, which was a funeral for journalism.
It was. Like, I was really proud and impressed with The Devil Wears Prada 2.
Me too. It's 7 out of 10. Yeah.
Like, I thought it was the hardest task possible to take the most beloved film imaginable and build another film on top of it. And I thought that David Frankel and Aileen Brosh McKenna did such a good job. No one remembers Miami Rhapsody enough.
Oh, I barely do.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's David Frankel's, like, 1990 rom-com with Sarah Jessica Parker that is, the like, it just reminds you how sexy and funny a film used to be able to be. And I worry that everyone thinking that rom-coms are Hallmark movies and Netflix versions of Hallmark movies have made people not realize what Nora Ephron was capable of doing.
Oh, right. I love Nora Ephron so much, I'm even interested in the flops. Have you seen Mixed Nuts recently?
Oh, I saw Mixed Nuts in the theaters, thank you very much, and have seen it recently.
This is what you get from Keep It the Podcast, people who saw Mixed Nuts in the theater.
But that's not what Stop That Train is. Stop That Train is really in the vein of Mel Brooks. Like, when doing the pink carpet last night, they were asking questions about comp movies, and so I brought up, Poseidon Adventure and
Towering Inferno, etc.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But I also think that, like, there was a queerness to Mel Brooks in his day. Like, there was, like...
Oh, giving Madeline Kahn something to do is queer.
Yes, and also just sort of, like, a gentle, like... But I would say, like, a bisexual energy that we now see in Stamp Town and Modern Clowning. You know? Just sort of a, like, I'll put anything in my mouth kind of game.
Right. I'm sorry. The world of Connor Story and clowning being something I now have to consider as part of an actor's journey, I'm just not there yet for me. But I allow people to, you know, go to small theaters in Los Angeles and try out their instincts.
Baby, I'm too far in now. Yeah. I'm too far in.
Oh, you went to a clowning class. Last time you were here, you're like, I have to get to my clowning journey.
I took a clowning class. I recently did a roast for clowns.
Well, thank God. Okay. Yes. If anyone could use it.
No, truly. But, like, the amount of food that they're throwing at their audiences. Also, they love to climb over a theater seat. Ugh. They love to climb over a theater seat.
We call that Roberto Benigni. Now, speaking of comic legends, before we get into the episode today, and I just want to say our guest today is the magnificent Mandy Moore, returning to Keep It, friend of the Crooked Network, first of all, but also friend to us. Great energy. Love Mandy Moore.
Like, the thing, I just have so much respect for Mandy Moore because there have been so many iterations of her, and she's somebody who has succeeded and thrived in so many different aspects of this industry that it is just like, almost in, like, a classic Shannon Doherty way of just, like, nobody's going to stop you.
And yet, also, if you pry enough, she'll get, like, we're both one-time Emmy nominees, and she's like, I will beat you to two. Love it.
Yes, you love the aggression.
Yes.
You really are only a one-time nominee?
I feel the same way.
Yes. Like,
What are you?
Only one time.
See?
But also one for one, baby. Okay.
I want to say recently Gwyneth Paltrow was nominated for an Emmy and lost, but she was one for one there and as an Oscar winner.
Yes.
And I was so into that. I love not losing.
Like, her being one for one as an Oscar winner is really crazy. Like, Lewis and I love talking about the Academy Awards too much.
And I have another comment on that regarding 1992 in a second.
But just, like, it was a classic trope of, like, the 50s and 60s of the ingenue winning for her very first film.
Yeah, Audrey Hepburn. Or
on her first nomination.
Julie Andrews, yeah.
Yes. And it is funny to me that Gwyneth was, like, sort of the last person who got that experience.
Yeah. You know? Well, we got, like, we actually have had a second coming with, like, a Mikey Madison or Brie Larson.
True.
Yeah.
Honestly, I kind of try to forget Anora.
Yeah. I thought it was... It was good. It's just we didn't have any other competitors really in that race, I guess.
Yeah,
I wanted Fernanda Torres to win, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there were great people up that year, and it was a very fun movie. I always wondered what if Pretty Woman were 3 hours.
Oh, I love when you Gene Shall at me. I wanted to say you brought up Sarah Jessica Parker in the early 90s. People really need to revisit the pre-Sex in the City. Sarah Jessica Parker. An Oscar nomination that should have happened is Sarah Jessica Parker in L.A. Story, a brilliant L.A. character, a parody of a character who lives in L.A. You never see her, like, Sarah Jessica Parker will never do a zany role again. Please check this out.
Sandy.
She is so funny in that movie. It's a Steve Martin movie, whom I'm about to bring up.
I just want to say, Sarah Jessica Parker in Footloose saying, I don't think all these dogs are barking, is one of the core things that made me gay.
Oh, okay. I love her in Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Yeah.
And by the way, she had the full Carrie Bradshaw persona when she was 16 years old.
Yes.
Wild. Okay. Speaking of Steve Martin, we both also just watched the Martin Short documentary that has come out this week. Can I tell you, normally I would kind of rebel against these sort of puff piece documentaries that just tell us that we were right for loving a beloved comedian. I'm sorry, if you are a funny person and you have only funny friends, it is always right to make a documentary about you. I'm sorry. Every time it is worth it. That John Candy thing we got like a year ago, it's like, oh my God, lacerating because everybody here is so primed to give good interviews, which is part of being a comedian, and they're so insightful.
It's so wholesome. Just sort of like we have so many stories of comedians who love drugs too much or this or that, or we're big personalities or we're mean or whatever. And this is about a community of nice people who wanted to be nice to each other. It is so Canadian.
Yes, it is a documentary about introducing Canadianness to others.
Yes, and the thing is like, it was made by Lawrence Kasdan, who directed
The
Big Chill. Well, I mean, that was what was really funny about 3/4 of the way into the film.
Kate Capshaw.
Kate Capshaw says, you know, it was that strange situation of I'm friends with all the guys and Stephen was best friends with all the girls. And Larry, didn't you make a movie about that? And just sort of like wondering what it was, this, you know, Lawrence Kasdan, who directed these great movies, who wrote so many of the Star Wars movies, why he decided that his friend who was still alive was somebody that he wanted to commemorate and explore. And, like, there really is an interesting element of tragedy in Martin Short's past, but also a very interesting way of responding and reacting to it. But I think just sort of realizing the way that, like, Martin Short's wife lived down the street growing up from Eugene Levy's wife, and her, like, and Nancy's brother was married to Andrea Martin, and these people, just seeing all of these videos that Steven Spielberg is taking of all of these people with all of their children just being at a lake in Muskoka, Canada.
Right. No, it is white Motown. It's like when you hear the stories of, like, Barry Gordy's by Diana Ross, and she lives down the street from Marvin Gaye and all this stuff. Whatever. It's very interesting. I was thinking about the singularity of Martin Short as a performer, because honestly, about 100% of his characters are in some way gay-coded.
Yes.
What other straight person has ever been like that, where the energy is a little bit of, like, a flutter and a twinkle in the eye, and also making fun of the audience being obsessed with you?
Yes. Like, no, I mean, honestly, very L.A. modern clowning that, like, Ed Grimley, all of these characters are always a little bit looking towards the audience. Like, his breakdown of how the guy from, there was this film that they did about novelty products that were killing people on SNL in the 80s. And it was based on a chain-smoking makeup woman that they had at SNL. And him explaining that process and also her realizing that it was about her was just one of the great joys. But earlier this year, I, with the great Lindy West, had a conversation of just, like, why is Jiminy Glick the fat suit that we're okay with? And it was, like, general agreement, and it was just the sense of joy and fun, and that, like, yeah, like, Marty, yeah, you just love him.
Well, also, there's something about Jiminy Glick, and I'm glad that Jiminy Glick has had a renaissance on TikTok in some ways. Like, every once in a while, a clip of him making fun of a celebrity pops up, and people seem to really get it. My favorite thing about him is, and this also harkens back to my favorite SNL sketch of all time, Morning Latte, with Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry. It's what he's doing is making fun of the familiarity an entertainment host has with celebrities, except his familiarity is, we both know you're full of shit.
Right.
And the way that the familiarity forces the person listening to have to agree with them while they are being insulted is so brilliant. I've never seen that done before. And I just want to say the highlight of my career as of right now is I was watching this documentary last night, Martin Short, and I forgot that at Kimmel, Jiminy Glick hosted for a day.
Oh, wow.
I wrote a line in this movie that Jiminy Glick said.
Oh, that's very fun.
While he's interviewing Bill Hader. This is why I directed this whole conversation, so I can brag about that.
That is a true middle-aged comedy writer experience. Yes. It's just sort of like, oh, Jesus, I wrote that.
Yeah, no, right. No, it's like writing for Kimmel is like writing for a newspaper. You have to put something out every day. Who knows what got on the air?
Okay, one of the best experiences I ever had was I was working for a week. It was a Blue Sky room for Hacks, and Susie Essman was there.
Oh, and who's written on everything. And you all know her from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yes, but I was finally got to the point where I told her what she meant to me, and I was talking about the Oprah she was on, and how I saw her, and she had this joke about brisket. And Susie,
I'm there.
Susie Essman's response was, I was on Oprah?
Right, you just have to go and do things, trying to survive, etc. My one insight into the Oprah Winfrey experience is, you know, one of my best friends, one of your good friends, Diablo Cody, was on Oprah during the Juno heyday, like promoting Juno. And she said that you kind of didn't know when you were on the air or off, except that Oprah would take her shoes off during commercials, but then put them on when they were filming. That's but you were funny. Like, wait, are we talking? Because it was the same either way. She's talking to you, and they just knew to zoom in and zoom out.
But also, we can't talk about this Marty Short documentary without discussing the fact that, like, every time you get a reaffirmation that Tom Hanks is as nice as you want him to be.
It really is upsetting because he's so into typewriters. Yes. And I just want to hate somebody who that's their whole thing. But it's like he and his wife have a lovely relationship. I will say, you know, my beef, if you will, with Tom Hanks is I hated the performance as Mr. Rogers.
Oh.
Because I'm sorry, if you're going to play Mr. Rogers, it really should have been Martin Short because, honestly, he was a little gay.
That we never gave. Did Martin Short ever get anything that was a gesture at a respectable dramatic performance other than like damages or something?
I was going to bring up damages because I believe Martin Short still needs the Tom Cruise and Magnolia performance yeah. that reveals the real dark, you know, like the Robin Williams Death to Smoochie thing, where it's like, there is darkness to what he does.
Yes.
The glimmer in his eye is very knowing and all, and a little condescending. Well, but, I want that explored.
I mean, and the documentary is really good about giving you a very alcoholic dad, like a real run of deaths in his life. And also the way that everyone is consistently describing, it doesn't matter what bad thing happens to him. He just gets up the next day and keeps going. And there is like a darkness behind that. But also let's very briefly just discuss like Catherine O'Hara in her mid-30s and what a level of beauty and charm that was.
Oh, geez. No, I mean, there's a lot of Catherine O'Hara footage in this movie.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, it's painful. I mean, just even like her insight into Martin Short, like she has that Canadian thing of wanting to describe someone she loves, but immediately exhausted. You know, just like, oh, God,
okay.
You talk to him and he enters the room and it's just so lovely. You know, that kind of thing.
Catherine O'Hara's eulogy in Toronto for John Candy.
Don't even bring this
yes.
shit up. This is one of the greatest clips you could ever find on YouTube. It's part of the John Candy documentary. Catherine O'Hara talking about John Candy. It is the best eulogy I've ever heard. And I'm including that fucking John Henson eulogy that will make you shoot tears perpendicularly from your face.
But the other thing I wanted to say is that, so famously, the Stonewall riots happened on the day of Judy Garland's funeral. And I, like, there's always this, like, debate back and forth about whether it was one of the factors that impacted things. And on the day that Catherine O'Hara died, with everything that has been going on politically in this country, I was like, I get it.
Go on ahead.
I get being like, okay, this is the thing that makes me have no hope anymore.
Yeah. Ugh. God. Singular, one out of one person. I'm so glad we got that performance in the studio out of her at the end, too, because that had the drama in it and the comedy, and she's capable of both.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, I can't believe that's not the whole episode. But
yes.
Anyway, as I said, we've got a great show for you today. Guy and I will be talking about Stephen Colbert's final week with The Late Show. Hopefully, our ample late night experience will help us in this conversation. Then my friend Mandy Moore will be here to talk about her new movie, The Breadwinner. But before we go to break, I have some great news for you LA listeners. If you're in the area, come catch a taping of, I've never heard of this show, Love It or Leave It. They've moved into a new space at Interwoven Studios and have an exciting lineup of guests, including the hilarious stand-ups Tig Notaro, Todd Glass, Aparna Nancherla, and more. Get tickets at crooked.com/events. And if you're not in LA, you can watch Love It or Leave It on YouTube or listen wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be right back. Today's show is sponsored by Strawberry.me. Ask yourself these 5 questions to see if it's time to switch jobs. 1, am I growing or just repeating the same experience over and over? 2, do I feel energized by my work or am I constantly drained and counting the hours until it's over? 3, am I learning skills that will still be valuable 3 to 5 years from now? 4, do I know what my next career move should be or am I just hoping something better shows up? And 5, if I stay here another year, will I be proud of my progress or regret staying comfortable? Was that bone-chilling for you? If these questions made you realize it might be time for a change, you should talk to a career coach through Strawberry.me. Their coaches work with you one-on-one to understand your strengths, identify your gaps, and build a clear roadmap toward a career you're actually excited about. Because the biggest risk isn't making the wrong move, it's staying stuck without a plan. Take control of your future at strawberry.me/keepit today and get 50% off your first coaching session. That's strawberry.me/keepit. Keep It is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol. I have to tell you about this game-changing product not only I make my friends use, but I watch them use before a night out with drinks. It's called Pre-Alcohol. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. So every time I have my friends over for drinks, I like to set some out for them. Just, you know, make the casual suggestion. You know, who knows what's going to happen tonight to you. So why don't you take this now and we'll see what happens. And the answer is they are always thrilled. Literally, maybe it's the compliment I get most from my friends that actually I changed their night by introducing them to this product. Every time they have pre-alcohol before drinks, I notice a difference in them the next day. And they also notice it, of course. Even after a night out, I can confidently plan on them feeling fine without worry. From the crack of the bat at the stadium to the start of wedding season and the roar of engines in Indy, May is packed with back-to-back reasons to be out. Don't let a rough morning after keep you on the sidelines. Drink pre-alcohol to stay ahead of it and make the most of every Saturday this month. So go to zbiotics.com/keepit to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use Keep It at checkout. Zbiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to zbiotics.com/keepit and use the code KEEPIT at checkout for 15% off. This week, after 11 years and nearly 1,800 episodes, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert comes to a close. Last year, CBS announced that it would be ending both comedian Stephen Colbert's run and The Late Show franchise altogether after 33 years. Colbert inherited The Late Show from David Letterman, who originally hosted from 1993 until his retirement in 2015. Colbert's tenure was marked by its earnestness and depth in the sometimes cynical, usually lighthearted late night landscape. What do you think Colbert brought to this space? I remain shocked at the pivot of this show that he began, you know, on the Colbert Report. Yes. I mean, accepting things like Strangers with Candy, etc., as one of the crazier and biggest swings in comedy that totally worked.
Yeah.
And then knowing he could still pivot to a place of, as we just said, earnestness.
Like, the elegance and sophistication of the show was what he brought. And it was really interesting having David Letterman on his show, because it was sort of the question of what's the thread that remains there. They're two very different comedic voices. Like, Letterman was so edgy and sometimes like mean or off-putting to his guests, where Colbert was a whole lot more welcoming and a whole lot more lovely. But I think it was sophistication. It was like Stephen Colbert was the guy most likely to have on a novelist. Stephen Colbert.
That is true. Yes. Yeah. You could count on him to actually be invested in who was sitting across from him.
Right.
And I think also additionally, my favorite thing about him is the questionnaire he would do.
Yeah.
Because I'm just obsessed with, one, good interviewing, knowing you can get a good interview out of an interviewee.
Yes.
And like, I honestly think there is a hole in pop culture from where Inside the Actor's Studio was.
No, it really gave you that feeling of Inside the Actor's Studio. I will sometimes just watch a YouTube run of a bunch of Colbert questionnaires, because it is such an interesting insight into people, seeing the different ways that people approach what number am I thinking of. Before the end of this run, I do want to know what number he is thinking of.
Yes.
But, like, I feel like he was able to take this absurdism that he had from his sketch days, from work with Amy Sedaris and Paul Dinello, and from the Colbert Report, and really expand it and be in himself entirely on that show in a way that, like, only a really seasoned performer can. Also, just the beauty of the times that Amy Sedaris came and guested on his show. Truly magnificent. There's nothing better than when your host is scared of someone.
Yes.
Meryl Marco coming on Letterman is one of the great acts of violence that has ever happened. This is David Letterman's ex-girlfriend who had created the show with him, who came on with a love letter from him in case he decided to get too high-handed with her. Magnificent. But just Amy Sedaris ran that show the minute she showed up, and it was always fun.
You know what? David Letterman, for being, you know, the kind of cynical, eye-rolling guy in a show. And most clips I've seen of him since, like, I just saw that the magician who did the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Oz Perlman, like, do a bit with him. He is, like, a self-conscious guy.
Yes.
In a way that, like, someone like Stephen Colbert is not. I think we underestimated the sort of insecurity underlining a lot of what he did.
I'm going to say line between stand-up and improviser. I think improviser slash sketch person.
Wow, stand-up is an insecurity thing.
Yes, and it is. And your persona is an ossified thing that is kind of distant from, like, it has varying levels of proximity, but like what Stephen Colbert did, and I think really showed on this show in a way he didn't anywhere else, was how much complete control of every aspect of himself he had. He could go big absurd, but he could also roll it back to sincere and be really comfortable with that. And like the Colbert questionnaire and the questions that would come at him, like this is a man who could honestly tell you what he made for dinner last night and yeah. not turn it into a joke.
No, you know what he kind of reminds me of a little bit? And I was just thinking that I miss this host in particular, probably the greatest TV host of all time, but I also think the greatest game show host of all time. He almost has that Dick Clark control of
yes.
volume, and like he can slow it down enough that you're leaning in and yes. it's not boring. I don't yeah. know. It's like an old broadcaster trick somehow. Like all these hosts once upon a time, game show hosts too, Alex Trebek included, came from radio.
Yes.
And he obviously didn't really come from radio, but he has that vibe of like, I'm leaning in to listen to what's happening and the laughs are comforting.
There were interesting times that he... Like, the monologue was always an interesting place for Stephen Colbert because there were times when it felt like he had approved a joke that he was funny and he loved, but, like, wasn't the right joke for his voice. Like, it really, I don't know, maybe it was, like, he frequently did a monologue that required him to go to very different perspectives and voices during the course of a monologue, and I thought that that was interesting compared to somebody like Jimmy Kimmel, who just, like, is more of a stand-up and has more of a sense of...
Even though he's not a stand-up, yeah.
Right. Seems like it,
yeah,
you know?
Well, speaking of coming from radio, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, yes. But it was, like, you know, I am not the biggest fan of what The Tonight Show has become. Julie Klausner, I think, hit it 10 years ago when she said, when did The Tonight Show become a children's birthday party? and Colbert kept it sophisticated and made it comedy forward, but also just that very 70s feeling of you're going to have an elegant evening.
Yeah, kind of Dick Cavett.
Yes,
yeah.
Very Dick Cavett.
Yeah, and also sort of like him, like he would court, you know, the Trump, like what Trump is a confrontational person. And I feel like he resisted the confrontational nature of being yes. a comic in a way that, like, for instance, Jimmy Kimmel really leans into. But at the same time, it's like he sort of used that sophisticated thing to sort of weave his way into a counter argument that I thought was impressive, because in another way you could call him reticent, but he's not reticent. He wants to say something important.
Yes. The death of these late night shows is such an interesting reflection of our hunger for monoculture and the death of monoculture. Like, these late night shows, when it was just The Tonight Show, this is where we got our clips. This is where, like, yeah. Water Cooler Talk was clips. Water Cooler Talk was us discussing the things that had happened the night before on The Tonight Show, and where we got conventional wisdom and that kind of thing. And the way that, like, I mean, Trump got mad at Kimmel and Colbert for being places where resentment of him could crystallize and criticism of him could crystallize in a place that wasn't politicized as clearly. It was a dinner party,
yeah.
you know,
or
a cocktail party.
I mean, this seems like such a basic thing to bring up to someone like you, but I always so resent people who say that they hate that the late night host got political. It's like, first of all, in order to talk about whatever is happening in the world, like you necessarily have to wade in. If you watch any old clip of Johnny Carson, he was talking about presidents constantly.
Yes, and like I think all of them, like even The Daily Show, which is sort of the most conventional wisdom progressive kind of thing, is still trying to take things down from both sides, which I think has its own issues. There's nothing I hate more than the Malcolm Gladwell article about what's wrong. Or maybe it was a radio story, but it's about what's wrong with the Colbert Report.
Mm.
And he's,
oh God,
yes, he is basically arguing that by being ambiguous and having it be unclear whether Colbert agrees with or disagrees with what he's saying, that makes it bad political comedy. And it's like, Malcolm Gladwell, I don't think you've done 10,000 hours on this.
Yeah.
Like that's like what makes it wonderful is that it was something that people could approach from every angle, but was possibly pushing them to see things in a new way. There was something really beautiful about that. And
yes.
I did.
And dangerous. Yeah.
Yes. And there was something I really loved having Colbert at both speeds, because like the deeply political and deeply like caricatured Colbert Report, you know, making the way for this like warm and lovely and very sincere Stephen Colbert was nice.
And by the way, I still think about him on Strangers with Candy.
Yes.
There are only a few television shows in history where we never got a second one of them.
Right.
Like, there's no heir to that show.
Yeah.
And
and also having a perfect articulation of what Amy Sedaris does, surrounded yes. by the people who should be surrounding her.
Yes. And yes. which she clearly chose.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm very fascinated by people. Her friend Cola Scola comes yes. to mind, who don't lean into what they're supposed to be making ever. They just make what they want. Yes. And then if it works out, it works out. Yes. You know?
Know that the danger of who the world wants you to be and the refusal to do that, I think the best and most dangerous kind of comedy is when you are coming so close to who the world wanted you to be. Gilda Radner doing Linda Weiss and Rhonda Weiss and the Rondettes.
You mean the punk singer and stuff?
No. This was her sort of like girl groupie 1960s.
Yes, right, yes.
None of my friends went to Vietnam. They all went to law school.
Yeah.
Like, really great. And Taylor Tomlinson's last special really is a very similar kind of, like, the world wanted me to be a Christian comedian, and I am instead this queer comedian, and this is what that means to me. But, like, we also, I want to give respect to the fact that Stephen Colbert really worked, too, when replacing the 12:30 show on CBS, create a space for a female host in late night, in after midnight. And I really appreciated and respected that. And also, I think Taylor Tomlinson jumping out of the exploding helicopter of late night just before it explodes, I think was amazing and brilliant.
Also, just enjoy her in general.
Yes.
How do you feel about the online space taking the mantle of late night, and that, you know, we still do get to watch, like, funny people interview funny people.
Yes.
It can be a podcast. It can be whatever, a YouTube show. It can be like one of these, you know, Hot Ones type things. Are you satisfied at the conversations we get out of them that we used to get out of a David Letterman, out of a Johnny Carson, etc.?
Well, what's funny is now the clips are the 7-minute version of the interview. You know, it used to be you only got those 7 minutes after the pre-interview with the producer. And now you watch Amy Poehler do the entire hour and a half.
Yeah.
What bothers me is we're missing the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes.
You know, like, I don't hunger for, you know, celebrities to be playing very, very scripted charades with my hosts. That's something that, you know, Jimmy Fallon is doing, and I don't think we need more of it.
But can I say something about that show, though? It is hard to come up with new games.
Yes.
And, like, the people who write those games on that show, that is impressive. And, by the way, like a lot of those things can be sold as, like, their own game shows, and instead they're just being filtered onto this show.
Refillable buckets on a late-night show are the hardest thing to do, but I think the refillable buckets that are funny, that have space for jokes in them, I like more. And I just, you know, I think Seth Meyers works really hard to be very monologue forward with his show. But I would sort of like topical jokes. Like, basically, like, for a period of time, Twitter was where we got our topical jokes.
Oh, and I miss it. Yes.
Yes. But, like, having a team of 15, 20 people, the thing you do every day, writing topical jokes on something is something I miss.
Yeah. Also, I have to say, as a writer, it is just so pleasurable.
Yes.
You know, like, to, first of all, maybe it's a sort of ruse you're putting on for yourself, but, like, it gives you the impression you're keeping up on everything. You know, like, getting just, like, having to write a few jokes, even if you don't care about whatever the topic is, every day, it's such a good exercise.
I wrote some jokes for Chelsea Handler for The Roast. I'm not telling tales out of school. She's mentioned it. But just sort of the lovely thing of going into a document and writing some jokes because you're supposed to, and then just keeping going because you're liking what you're doing, you know?
Oh, my God.
It's really fun.
One time I wrote something for Busy Phillips, hosted something.
Yes.
It was an after show of an award show, maybe the Globes or something.
Yeah.
Actually, it might have been the Oscars. I don't know. But I was in a Word doc, and some other cursor was following me, and I wasn't paying attention. And then someone let me know it was Tina Fey. I was like, I can't be here. It was like a horror movie.
That's the
I was like,
most,
let me leave the room.
That's the most fun.
Yes.
That's really fun.
But it was like, but also it's like when you're typing in a document and other people see it, suddenly I'm the worst typist.
Yeah.
Suddenly it's like full, like I'm writing a ransom note and there's blood on my hands.
We have answered the question of these late night shows being too expensive and a little bit bloated by going to televised podcasts like the one we are on right now.
Sure.
And is there any way of getting to a middle space where you have more production value, but it isn't what it once was?
I mean, there just should be more, like, those podcasts that are for that help people with ADD that are literally 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
There should be more brevity.
Uh-huh.
Because I think the forcing people to keep it short is what we miss.
Right.
Because, like, the quick laughs you get in a late night interview with a few jokes in, then we throw it a commercial. I just think there's an economy to that that really works. And it's like, for instance, I like Amy Poehler's podcast.
Yes.
But, like, I something about editing past the long laugh really hits for me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, again, maybe it's just I'm impatient. Maybe it's just I don't feel like I have the time to like listen to people actually have a real conversation. But the forcing people into just quicker moments, I think, gets us more laughs.
Wanting to feel a little more curated. And there was a way that I think like publicists and producers kind of sucked the life out of some of what a late night interview used to be. Like there used to be some chaos there. And now there's like not enough intensity for chaos. I do want to acknowledge the fact that Colbert had Bette Midler on last week in an homage to her final. Bette Midler was the final guest on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show. And it is one of the great, one of the truly great late night performances of all time. And
one more for my baby and one more for the road, or whatever that song is called. And she did not sing When Beneath My Wings, as people guessed.
No.
Yeah.
And it was, somebody was bringing it. And I think that that's what you sometimes miss on a televised podcast, is getting a real sense that somebody is bringing it. They have turned on their A game.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, watching people hang out with their friends is fun, but like having a little bit more of a panel-y sense of, and you're on, baby.
Yeah.
I would like.
I so admire anybody, any guest on a talk show who comes in with a little bit of a bit.
Yes.
I have to say, that's my favorite thing about Meg Stalter. Like, if she comes on Kimmel, it's like, maybe I'll dress as a pageant contestant and have this whole bit. It's so nice. It reminds me of like a brilliant award show presenter.
Yes.
Just coming in with an idea, a thing they want to do that, you know, gets us past the obligatory patter they have to read.
Yeah. I mean, like, award shows really are the canary in the coal mine of this thing of, is it going to be scripted and dull and boring, or are you going to take this very structured thing and put some life into it?
Yeah.
And everyone has the option of, like, it was just this Gen X sensibility of, like, oh, promotion is stupid, and that really let celebrities think that they were allowed to hate the process of going on talk shows. And, I mean, back to Jiminy Glick. Like, Jiminy Glick really is this celebration of the worst in what a local or entertainment correspondent is capable of bringing to a junket.
Yes.
And like Jiminy Glick also says, but think about how fun that could be. And, you know, people not realizing just what a fun experience a late night show could be is unfortunate. And I think like Colbert, Kimmel, like these guys love the form. And so I love them for that.
I honestly think if Jiminy Glick came back just as a show with, I just feel like people are craving that it would like heal a lot of things, because it would give you a bit of a celebrity interview and yet also well-edited comedy.
Right.
You know, I mean, it doesn't need to be an hour and 45-minute extravaganza like this podcast every week. I'm part of the problem, I want to say. You know, Jiminy Glick.
Though, Lewis, you are also bringing, keeping snappiness alive.
Like, oh,
you
I'm are. Too. Yes. No, sometimes literally, yes. Recently, I was home and my brother asked me to do something and I was like, I don't do chores. He goes, wow, you really just snap. I was like, I can't believe I'm this person either. Yes. No, yeah, the brevity is what I'm most concerned about. I just feel like we're in a universe of everybody has an attention deficit disorder, but at the same time, everyone is so fucking long-winded.
Right.
How can we solve this? We all don't want to listen to each other that long, so can you keep it brief?
They don't understand. The young people do not understand preparation.
Right. Like, I guess that's what it's about.
Yes. Yeah. Like the notion that someone could come in with an agenda or clarity, and that people aren't just saying exactly the thing that they want to say at the moment. I don't know, though. Saying the thing that you want to say in the moment can be very snappy and good.
Yeah.
They just are long-winded.
Yeah, right. No, it's very time-consuming for me. So anyway, thank you to people like you for keeping it snappy, too. You always got a clipped soundbite guy. I know this is going right on the Instagram. Anyway, Stephen Colbert, his last week is this week. Kimmel is actually taking the Thursday off.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And all the other talk shows are
that's
as well.
Beautiful.
It's very, very lovely. We still have a meeting on Thursday, though, so I don't really get time off. It sucks. I just came here to complain. Anyway, will you be watching the final episode? What do you think he's going to do? Please let us know. We'll be back with the fabulous Mandy Moore. This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace gives you everything you need to offer services and get paid all in one place. From consultations to events and experiences, showcase your offerings with a customizable website designed to attract clients and grow your business. Get paid on time with professional on-brand invoices and online payments. Plus, streamline your workflow with built-in appointment scheduling and email marketing tools. With Squarespace's collection of cutting-edge design tools, anyone can build a bespoke online presence that perfectly fits their brand or business. Start with Blueprint AI, Squarespace's AI-enhanced website builder, to get a fully custom website in just a few steps, using basic information about your industry, goals, and personality to generate premium quality content and personalized design recommendations. Squarespace also offers a complete library of professionally designed and award-winning website templates with options for every use and category. No matter where you start, your website is flexible to what you need, with intuitive drag-and-drop editing, beautiful styling options, unrivaled visual design effects, on-brand AI content, and more ways to list what you offer. No experience required. Get discovered fast with integrated Squarespace SEO tools. Every website is optimized to be indexed with meta descriptions, an auto-generated sitemap, and more, so you show up more often on search engines and bring in more of your ideal customers. Every dream needs a domain. Squarespace Domains makes it easy to find the best name for your business at one fair, all-inclusive price. No hidden fees or add-ons required. Every Squarespace domain comes with advanced privacy and security tools included to ensure your domain remains online and protected. Plus, Squarespace provides everything you need to bring more of your dream to life, whether that means building a website or adding a professional email service. Don't wait to claim your name. Invest in your dream domain today. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/keepit to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/keepit. Keep It is brought to you by Nutrafol. You know that feeling when your hairline starts filling in, or when you head out the door and realize you didn't even have to do that last mirror check to make sure everything's sitting right? Those small moments start to add up, and before you know it, you're just feeling like yourself again. Nutrafol supports hair health from within, helping you grow stronger, visibly thicker hair, so those that-feeling-when moments happen more and more often. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF-certified for sport, and clinically tested. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Nutrafol offers multiple formulas for men and women tailored to different life stages, like postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors such as a plant-based diet, so you get support that's actually right for you. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. Let your hair become one less thing taking up space in your head, and see thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you visit Nutrafol.com and enter promo code KEEPIT. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code KEEPIT. Joining me today is a fellow podcaster who co-hosts her own show, That Was Us, but she's obviously most known as an international superstar singer and actor. She's now starring in the new film, The Breadwinner, alongside Nate Bargatze. The movie is out in theaters May 29th. Please welcome back to Keep It the fabulous and endorphin-giving Mandy Moore.
Hi, I'm so happy to be back. It's been years. It's been too long. I think it was 2019.
Yeah, no, Mandy, it's disgusting. I mean, it's 7 years ago. You've had literally two albums out since I've seen you last.
And three children.
Yes.
Two albums and three children.
Right. And an Emmy nomination, I believe, also. Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes. Ugh. We're both in the one-time Emmy nominee club, so it's...
I'm vying to beat you. One of these days, I'm like, I gotta get one more nomination than Lewis. Just one more.
Okay. Honestly, it's on. I've been looking for, like, you know, a vendetta to fuel, like, my EGOT path, and this will help.
Okay. I'm down. I'm okay. Down to be your rival.
Damn it. Okay. All right. Now my mind is set. Okay. We'll start with the film career you have always been thriving in. You have a new movie, The Breadwinner. First of all, this is a movie filled with funny people. And my question to you is, working with that many funny people, is it great or so annoying?
It's great. As a non-funny person, being around like a group of crazy funny people, I did find it challenging just like not laughing. That's my, you know, that's my plight as the non-funny person in the scene. So I had to like go to some really dark places of like, don't laugh, don't break, don't be the one that breaks. That's always my greatest fear. If someone else breaks first, then I will definitely break. But I didn't want to be the first one. But yeah, it's like Colin Jost and Kate Berlant and Nate, obviously, and Kumail Nanjiani, Will Forte. that guy is so, you just like look at his sweet face and you start laughing. Like there's something about him.
No, he always plays it down too. Like yes. He knows what he's doing is funnier than what he's giving out.
Yes, correct, correct. And he's like the funniest person in the room by far.
What was your take working with Nate Bargatze, who, by the way, I obviously saw him host the Emmys, and I know he's like a famous name, but it's occurring to me that he taps into a part of America that is like enormous. Like this is somebody who's like just a huge voice for like a lot of America. What was it like working with this guy and in this movie where he basically turned a lot of his stand-up into the film?
Yeah, he helped write the movie. I agree with you. I was a huge fan of Nate's. I had seen all of his like Netflix specials and stuff. And but I hadn't seen him live until last weekend. I went in L.A. He was playing the Intuit Dome. I had never been to arena comedy before. I don't know if you have. It is like a wild. I'm like, wow, I'm here with 19,000 other people. And we're all laughing and he has like the entire crowd galvanized. I'm like, that is a superpower that I can't even begin to wrap my head around. So yeah, it's like he taps into something that is universal. Like in LA, if you can play two nights of 20,000 people a night and then you're going to like Syracuse. That was the crazy part of making this movie with him too, is that he would film all day. This was his first movie. He had never done a film before. And then like on the weekends, he would go and play like three stand-up shows and then come back like Monday morning to be on set at 7 a.m. Like it was truly heroic what she was doing. I'm like, this, you're going to get exhausted. You can't do this with every film, just so you know. But Lewis, you'll get a kick out of this. My favorite part was like the first day. He was like, so they don't shoot movies in order? I was like,
whoa,
no. But mind you, like Sweet Nate had done SNL and probably some shorts for SNL. But other than that, I don't think he'd ever done anything like truly on camera like this before. So he was like, wait, they don't shoot in order. And I was like, oh, you mean like sequential order? He's like, so what? I was like, no. And I was like, not unless it's like Boyhood or something. And he was like, Boyhood? Like,
no.
I was like, never mind. No. They're going to shoot all the car dealership stuff first and then all the stuff at the house. I was like, it's kind of location specific. But in my mind, I was like, oh, yeah, someone had to tell me that back in the day, too. Like, it's just not it's not obvious. It doesn't just occur to you. Somebody has to kind of walk you through that. But I found that very sweet that he didn't know that before making this film.
Oh, my God. I also feel like routinely when you're in movies, we were talking about this before we started, you are routinely working with legends. I assume you're often the mentee when you were on these sets growing up. What is it like to actually teach someone something about this business?
I was laughing about it this morning because when I did that movie, A Walk to Remember, I was 16. And I didn't have a ton of experience. So Shane West, who was like the male lead in the movie, he was the one that had to kind of show me like how to hit my mark and like making sure that I like go through my sides the night before of like what the scene is the next day. So I had him to sort of shepherd me through that process. And then I got to do that for Nate on this movie. But yeah, I mean, the fact that like I can look back and one day I'll be able to tell my kids, like I did a movie with Robin Williams and I did a movie with Diane Keaton. Like it's pretty unbelievable. I did a crazy, I was talking to somebody yesterday. There was a crazy film that I did that no one ever saw and nor should they, called Southland Tales. Have you heard of this movie?
Actually, this just came up the other day for some reason. I'm trying to remember why, but yes, I know the movie.
Okay. So, I mean, it was a movie that I think literally everyone in Hollywood was in. Like, it was Justin Timberlake and Amy Poehler. All of my stuff was with Sarah Michelle Gellar, The Rock. The Rock played my husband. And this is like early Rock evolving from wrestler to actor days. Wallace Shawn, John Larroquette. Like, it was crazy. And it was Richard Kelly who did that movie, Donnie Darko. This was like his follow-up. And we were laughing because none of us knew what the movie was about. And there was supposedly, like, none of us knew. It was so hard to keep track of and somewhat, like, nonsensical. And my husband actually, I don't think it's, like, out on Criterion, but he got a copy of it, a DVD. Somehow he found a way to watch this movie. I've never seen it. And he's like, Mandy, it is so bizarre and hard to follow. There is a companion graphic novel that he also bought that he's like reading through now. he goes deep on that sort of stuff, my sweet husband. But yeah, so I also have that to like tout in my back pocket to my kids one day that I was also part of this crazy movie with literally everybody else in the business.
I had underestimated that it went that deep because I remember the movie.
It went deep.
Yeah.
Deep. Like, I wish I could look at the IMDb right now about like, because it was like this giant ensemble. Full of people that I didn't get to meet because my little one section of the movie was with those people. But strange times. If you stick around this business long enough, you got a couple of those and you're on your resume too.
I think one meeting with Wallace Shawn was probably worth it. Just to hear the voice in person.
Yeah, it was worth it. It was so much fun. He was lovely. He was lovely.
Oh, yeah. And an accomplished playwright, I just want to say.
Yes.
Now, additionally, my question to you is, what is your appetite for comedy, period? Like, are you somebody who will go and seek out, like, a comedian live? Like, do you care about that at all?
Yeah.
Because your taste to me, if you just listen to your music, by the way, even the last two albums, you have such a, like, you love sophistication, I feel like. And I feel like the way comedy gets down and dirty and, shall we say, low, might not appeal to you.
It sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Like I just finished watching Rooster and I really liked that show.
I did
and
like Rooster myself. I also enjoyed it.
Right?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm just like on my little like pedestal, like shouting it out to the rooftops of it was great. I love Steve Carell and I love Danielle Deadwyler. Like, but Rory Scovel is one of my favorites. Like he gets down.
Yeah.
And dirty. But my husband and I saw him at Largo a month ago or something. And I don't think I've laughed that hard maybe ever. Like my sides, like my abs hurt. I was like, this is a good workout, low key. So people like that really tickle me. So on occasion, yeah, it can definitely get me going. But yeah, I guess I don't seek out that kind of comedy too much, I would say.
Well, you also just put your finger on my problem with comedy, which is, one, if I'm seeing it live, you know, and I'm under-enthused, but it's somebody I know or just the vibe of the room, I often feel I have to laugh. And I have a German resting angst that prevents that most of the time. But secondly, if it is funny, it's so exhausting to keep laughing. Like, I don't...
Exhausting.
I almost, you know, like, what's like the happy medium? I can't get there.
Ugh. Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's either not funny or it's just like, yeah, it's too much. But I'll take the latter, I think.
Also, speaking of comedic moments, in this movie, you are confronted with the cast of Shark Tank. And
yeah,
I want to talk about what is it like interacting with these people? Because, by the way, following Marty Supreme, I am worried we're platforming these people too much. You know,
we are platforming. Well, I didn't even realize at that time.
Yeah.
So we filmed after an entire like actual episode of Shark Tank was being shot. So already these guys are exhausted. Obviously, Lori Greiner is in our film, so she knows what she's a part of. But we like show up in the green room. We're handing out like the sides for Mr. Wonderful and Robert, everybody, to Damon, to look at what their lines are and what they're doing. And they're already like, what is this? It's a movie. And at the time, I didn't know that Mr. Wonderful was already an actor.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they like the first take, everyone was kind of getting their feet wet and a little like dubious about what was going on. And then by the time we got around like to the second take, they were like, oh, they locked in. Like, I know who I'm supposed to be. I know the role I'm supposed to play. Even just like within like their little ecosystem there. Like they definitely they know how to like interact with each other. They know what their like prescribed roles are. So it ended up becoming really fun, but I was legitimately terrified. I just like, I should have taken a beta blocker or something because I walked out like down the hallway where like the little automatic doors open and you sit there and see like the sea of them looking back at you. The stage manager was like, do you want me to give you the spiel that I give everybody, like every other contestant? And I was like, yes, give it to me. I want, like, I'm already nervous. I want to feel it. And he basically went through and talked about like, this is an opportunity. This is not like, you shouldn't tap into your nerves. You're here for a reason. You were chosen to be here for a reason. And just like a sweet motivational moment. But then you like walk down that little hall, that weird long hallway, and the doors open and they're sitting right there. And that first take, my heart was like beating out of my chest. I'm like, I think this is a terrible idea. Like, this invention is not great and they're not going to buy my idea. Like, and I was like, wait, I know what my lines are. But yeah, I felt the pressure. It was really on in that moment.
No, it reminds me of like American Idol or something. Whereas, I mean, American Idol, you actually have a song to sing, but there you have to perform having a conversation. So I just imagine that that is extremely intimidating and nervous making from the jump.
I always thought that. I'm like, wow, these poor people, like, let them just go out there and sing. Like, don't engage in small talk and where are you from and what are you? I'm like, just let them go out and have their moment because, like, your nerves are on a 12 at that point. It's the worst feeling.
When you see, like, young singers starting out, do you look at them with just both hope and also just, like, does a pang stir up in you based on, like, your past and, like, coming from the heart of Florida where, like, you know, the pop stars were churned out? Like, do you look at these people and immediately, like, a wave of empathy, like, comes over you?
I think a wave of empathy more for the world that we're all living in nowadays, like, with social media and the internet. It's wonderful that we can connect on Zoom, like, right now, and you're in LA and I'm in New York and we're able to record this and it's so much fun. But the fact that, like, young people have to endure the wave of, like, TikToks and Reels and Snapchatting and whatever the hell kids are doing these days, because I'm an old, I feel, like, the most empathy for, because I keep talking about it. And I know we're, like, we all are living in this, like, wave of nostalgia right now. But I feel like this whole week I've just been, like, I'm in New York and I have this nostalgia for, like, being here during the MTV days. And the fact that that's, like, not even an option anymore, that music videos don't exist, that, like, I guess you watch them on YouTube, that, like, there's no TRL, there's no, like, even visiting radio stations, really. Like, the way the music industry sort of functions is not, it doesn't exist in the same way. And even, like, making records, the last record came out 4 years ago of mine. Like, the idea of, yeah, we're going to do, you know, all the old fashioned stuff that you used to do. But really, like, we're just banking on, like, your song becoming a TikTok trend is, like, I'm like, I can't live in this world. This is not, I'm not meant for this era. So that's what I think of with young people mostly, is, like, they're better suited for it than I would ever be. But also, oof, it's got to be tough.
Did you think at the time you would ever be nostalgic for something like Total Request Live, though? Because I imagine at the time that felt completely chaotic.
It was, but it was also electric. Like, it was magical. Even not working at MTV, like, before that all happened for me, and being at home and, like, calling, like, the ridiculousness of, like, us waiting to see a music video that we had probably seen, like, 2 hours before or, like, earlier in the day. And it was, like, fingers crossed that your artist was going to get to number one on the charts that day, was just, like, and same with, like, calling into a radio station to hear a song. Like, the stakes felt so high, even though they weren't. Like, I miss those days, because convenience is wonderful and having everything, like, at our fingertips is fantastic. But also, like, it takes away that magical quality that I think of now, like, being in New York. Like, yeah, it was chaos, but it was also so rad to feel that energy of, like, you're in Times Square and there's, like, a sea of 20,000 kids screaming over a boy band that was, like, you know, up in the, like, windows above you. It's crazy.
You just put your finger on something I completely forgot, which is, I would call into TRL even though I had almost certainly seen the video that day. Like, still, I wanted it again.
It's like we were conditioned to do that or something. Yeah. It's like we wanted to participate in the process of voting. Like, our vote mattered.
Yeah, right. Do you remember what you called in and voted for? Because I definitely voted for Jennifer Lopez, If You Had My Love. I was a big fan of the On the Six album. And also, that's the summer, classic, the real boy band summer. I was in a sect of humanity that was obsessed with Madonna's Beautiful Stranger coming out. So that's what I requested.
Well, I know. Yeah. I know you and Madonna, of course, obviously. But yes, I mean, that video was everything, too.
She was hilarious. Yeah.
I distinctly remember Austin Powers. Like, the movie tie-ins with, like, music videos and stuff were just always the best.
Yeah. Oh,
I remember calling in for Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, the NSYNC holiday song.
Mandy, fuck
That's
yes.
what I remember.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of their best songs.
Really wanting that. One of their best songs.
Also, it's
on,
like,
my holiday mix.
Yes. No, it's immediately festive, too. It's like, oh, it is Christmas now, and we're at the mall.
It's on. Yes. We are shopping.
Yes. Oh, my God. We need to normalize, like, the fervor of shopping music. You know, like what they play during the montages in Clueless. I need more of that.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay, now that we're talking about music, I was just thinking about your catalog. And first of all, your last two albums, I love. You had two albums ago, Silver Landings, you had a song on it called I'd Rather Lose, in which the main line of the song, this is also my favorite song of yours, is... if the only way to win is by breaking all the rules, I'd rather lose. And I felt like that really put a bow on a certain experience as an entertainer. Do you feel like you were often made to be a more kind of competitive person than you are in order to survive?
That's a really good question. I feel like that's like a very existential question. I'm not made to be a hustler. Like innately, that is not how I'm built. And I look around me, my husband and I have this conversation a lot, at friends of ours that have similar jobs, that are in the business, that are so comfortable in that role, often find like a greater degree of success. And I'm like, I just don't have that same drive within me. Like, so if it means that I'm going to have to break the rules or I'm going to have to like go against that gut check, I'm probably just going to tap out. I'm just going to like stand on the sidelines and I'm going to pass. I'm going to say no. So I feel somehow I have eclipsed, you know, falling by the wayside. And I started as a 15-year-old and I'm 42 now. And so the idea that like I've been able to like finagle my way through the business without breaking all the rules, like that degree of longevity or that definition of longevity is success in my book.
And speaking of your own voice in music, something that has always wowed me about you is that while you were still a teenager, I'm pretty sure, you put out an album called Coverage, which was a very adult contemporary album for like a teenager. But at the same time, I cannot imagine anybody at your label was like, please put out an album covering Joni Mitchell and Carole King.
No, in fact, it was my last album that I owed Epic Records. And I was like, well, I'm going to do it my way then. And I think it's like it was... in no small thanks to doing films like Saved, which I had done, I was kind of like making at the same time. I was like, oh, I can make these sort of left of center choices that feel slightly irreverent. And I'm going to take that same philosophy and apply it to music. And all of the music that I have sort of discovered in the last like 3 or 4 years that I've fallen in love with, I'm going to put my own twist on it and hopefully introduce young people my age, like they should know who Joe Jackson and John Hyatt and obviously Joni and this like Elton John song. It's not Tiny Dancer. Like, I was excited about the opportunity to perhaps, at least in my own small way, contribute to like younger people discovering some of this music. It didn't necessarily unfold that way, but I still got to make the record and it still exists out there. And I'm really proud that, like, I got to make it, but no one at the label was jumping up and down. They're like, okay, this checks the box. You fulfilled your obligations to us and now you can move on and figure out what you're going to do next.
Because it's such a sophisticated vocal too. I mean, it's just like, it's such an unexpected choice following you were a traditional pop artist before that.
Yeah.
And by the way, some of those songs remain bangers. I want to be clear that one year, Mandy came to my birthday party, and I just want to say that music was on. I just put on my mix or whatever, and In My Pocket came on. Now, let me just say about this song, a fabulous song that is in the very small pocket of music I call belly dance pop. It's like Pussycat Dolls Buttons.
Shakira?
But a little Shakira. Okay. And also, Hilary Duff had a song called Stranger that was belly dance pop. From about 2008.
Pop.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta ask her about that. I don't know
where
that song.
You can
song.
Hear like kind of some chains in the background as, you know, the beat gets
and
down.
And the music video for In My Pocket also kind of like leaned into that as well. So sure.
Yes.
Belly dance pop. I'm proud.
I think you can bring it back. I just want to say. But the song accidentally came on and I thought Mandy Moore thinks I put this in to like woo her or something. And I did not.
I was so impressed. No, I would have been more mortified than impressed, but no, it was so sweet.
Oh, such a... What pop music are you into recently? Is it something you keep up with?
I don't keep up with.
So interesting.
But like, I think by like vicariously like listening to Keep It, I feel like I'm somewhat kept current on what the kids are doing, but I listen to podcasts. I listen to like news podcasts and stuff like that. Otherwise, like my kids actually have good taste in music, but it's nothing current. It's a lot of like Beatles and Tom Petty and David Bowie and, you know, Thin Lizzy. Like they've got, Taylor keeps them like, you know, tuned into good music. We don't have to listen to like silly kid music, which is great. But I will say, I've been telling this story a lot the last couple of days, but Gus, our 5-year-old, Taylor played Candy for him.
Oh.
And he really likes it. And now all three of them listen to it. But it's funny because Gus is like, Mom, can you put, he forgot the name of the song. He's like, can you put on the song that you made when you were my age? I'm like, in year five, I did not make my song when I was five. But I was like, but also, yeah, probably closer to your age than my age now, but sure. And they really like it, and they like the music video, and they think it's funny. And my daughter who's 18 months old, like she'll be like, yeah, like bopping her head in the car seat. It's very sweet that they like being able to introduce them to stuff that I did when I was like such a young person. And they don't really understand what I do. They think that I am also a podcast host, which I'm like, yes, I do that. But like sometimes we'll be in the car and like, you know, Spotify will like switch to finish one thing and like go to my podcast. And they see my picture like come up or something. And so that's what Gus thinks that I'm a podcaster. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. Yes, I host a podcast.
Now, I'll say about that song, there's an underrated level of one, angst in that song, but two, actual sass. And of course, you were also in the movie Saved giving a quite sassy performance. Do you like tapping into a vibe of in-your-face, finger-wagging sass?
Yeah. I like being a bitch.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's really fun. And it's not who I am. I see some head nodding back there in the studio. I love being a bitch. I love tapping into that. It's not who I am. Although if my buttons are pushed enough, I will like get angry enough to want to flip a table. It's not beneath me. But at Princess Diaries, I play a little sassy girl,
right.
And then Saved, obviously. The sass from Candy is funny because like, again, it is a pretty nonsensical song. I don't know what it means to miss someone like Candy. I didn't write the song. So it's like, I had no way into that. But also as like a 15-year-old, I hadn't even French kissed a boy at that point. So I was singing about a lot of things and that like degree of longing that I really had no business singing about because I had no idea. I had no point of reference. So that's something that like tickles me when I think back to that time. Like I truly was this little innocent girl, like walking around, not knowing, like having no connection to the music that I was singing. So I don't know where the sass came from.
I also want to say that naivete is actually realized in the video because you could not drive that green bug at the time.
No, they pulled the car.
Yeah.
Like a movie trick. It was on a trailer and we were just like driving through the streets of wherever we shot that music video. I don't even know. Somewhere in the like deep suburbs of Los Angeles.
It was full Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, just like old Hollywood magic. Yeah.
Yep. Old Hollywood magic. Yep.
Oh, before I forget, by the way, so Nate Bargatze, I guess, is simply going to have a theme park now. Can you explain what is happening with this? And he's like, and then you ask him about it and it feels like, oh, like sketch comedy, like the joke is up. No. This man will soon have a theme park.
No, it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's like going to be the new Walt Disney in the vein of like a Dollywood. I guess there was like Opryland also in Nashville. He's like, I grew up working at Opryland. It doesn't exist anymore. And he's like, and I want to bring that like family entertainment back to Nashville. It's fascinating. I'm like, dude, how do you have the time and the bandwidth to like do all of this, to have all of this on your plate? But somehow he finds the time. I'll go. I was like, can I get a fast pass? Like, I want to go to this. I want to go to the theme park. Maybe I'll get like a performance job there.
No, but you're from Florida. The idea that you would still go to a theme park. I feel like if I grew up near them, I would be so exhausted.
No, I love it. I think mainly because growing up in Orlando, like you really reserved going to the theme parks when you had company in town.
Mm.
I feel like it's much more, and it was pretty, like we lived like maybe an hour away from that side of town. I feel like I have like more access to Disneyland living in LA now, and I probably go more often than I even did growing up.
My final question for you is also pertaining to this movie, which is actual family entertainment. Like you can definitely introduce, you can show it to your kids, you can watch it with your spouse, etc. What do you actually use as family entertainment in your house? Because you have young kids. And I was thinking recently, like, I guess unless it's a superhero movie or like an animated movie.
Even that feels too old. Yeah. My kids don't watch a ton of TV. It's like just a weekend thing. And right now they're like into, you know, they're into the show called Wildcrats, which is like a PBS show about animals. And so that's not really co-viewing for me. I'm not super interested in Wildcrats, if I'm honest. But my husband did show our older guy Indiana Jones. And I was like, that feels, he's a little young for that. There's some scary things in that. But he loves it. We had to order him an Indiana Jones costume on Amazon and he like runs around with the whip. I'm like, can we take the whip away? The whip feels like it's actually going to hurt somebody. But he has like the little messenger bag and he's got the hat. It's very cute. So that was something that we watched recently together. But I don't know. I'm excited to show them this movie one day. It was one of the idea of like being able to do a film like this that harkens back to some of the sweeter family entertainment that we had growing up, you know, like Uncle Buck, like there's John Hughes films that feel like sweet and classic. And like there is a little something for mom and dad and for the kids. Like they don't make these movies anymore. So hopefully this movie will do well enough that Hollywood will realize there is a demand for this kind of entertainment because we need it. Families need it.
Also, one final actual question. You brought her up earlier. Do you have any memories of working with Diane Keaton that you can share? We had Taylor Page here last week, and she was talking about working on her on one of her last movies also. Yours was like 20 years ago, but yes.
It was 20 years ago. Man, it's still hard to think about the fact that she's gone. She just felt like eternal. Like she would always be around, showing up in like an incredible ensemble and like just floating. She was just like, that's when I think of with Di. Like she just like floated and flitted around the world. Like, I just remember her showing up in the mornings still, and it always comes back to fashion, but she's just so iconic in that sense, right? Like she would show up in like the most incredible ensembles, just her like street clothes. Like there was a glove and a boot and a big skirt with a belt and a hat. Like she kind of wore most of her own clothes, I feel like, for her character in Because I Said So. Like it was hard to distinguish between Di and the character. Like they were sort of one. And she was so deeply maternal. I was like 21 when we made that movie, and I felt like she was kind of a second mom for a couple months to me. I loved her. I feel like everybody that worked with her in that capacity where she got to be your family member, play your mom, if you had that good fortune, like you really felt that, like that warmth envelop you. She was so made to be a mother. She loved her kids, and like that just emanated on screen. And she was the best. There was like nobody like her. Just she was one of one for sure.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that. And also thrilled to have you back after 7 years. I'm sorry. The next time you're coming back is not 7 years from now. I refuse to think what that looks like.
Oh, my gosh. I will come back. Literally. I'm like, I know you know, you have a rotating cast of characters coming in as co-hosts. But anytime you need someone to fill in. I just like you're the best. I love listening to you. I love your conversations. You ask the best questions and always happy to chat.
Oh, thank you so much. And also, as I said when you came on the show, you are an endorphin-giving person. I'm thrilled always to talk to you. And I better see you in person soon. This has been so fucking awesome seeing you.
I need to give you like a big squeeze. All right, okay. Thanks for having me.
Coming soon. Okay. Thank you, Mandy, for being with us.
Bye. Thank you.
Keep It is brought to you by Koyuchi. I'm so excited to tell you about our sponsor, Koyuchi. Koyuchi is in a league of its own when it comes to bedding, bath, and home products. And their organic sateen and flannel sheet sets are the key to more comfortable, healthier sleep year-round. I care a lot about my diet, my skincare routine, but only recently have I thought about how important what I sleep on is to my health and wellness. I'm going to think about it right now. And I'm back. There are lots of choices for organic bedding out there, but Koyuchi stands above the rest because of their 35-year heritage, their extraordinary quality, and their commitment to ethical production. And you know how else they're ahead of the pack? I sleep on them every night and love it. Invest in your health and the best sleep of your life. All Koyuchi sheets are made of natural fibers and certified to be free of toxins and harmful chemicals that could seep into your skin. And they're so soft and gentle on your skin, too. You can sleep well and safely with Koyuchi. Koyuchi sheets give you effortless style, whether it's the subtle sheen of their sateen or the velvety brushed cotton flannel. Plus, vintage patterns, peaceful botanicals, and calming hues bring the natural world right into your home. And with every wash, these sheets just get softer and softer, can confirm. No pilling or tearing. These are crafted to last. If you want healthy, organic, luxury bedding that lasts a lifetime, you need Koyuchi. Get 15% off your first order when you visit koyuchi.com/keepit. That's koyuchi.com/keepit to get 15% off koyuchi.com/keepit. And we're back with the meanest part of the episode. It's Keep It. Guy, what are you saying Keep It to this week? I know you're rankled.
Lewis, that woman who reposts Miriam Malnick Azagwe's TikToks on Facebook, but under a different name, she can keep it.
Okay.
Am I referring to Orthodox Jewish labor and delivery nurse Miriam Malnick Ezagwi? Yes. Do I worship her and her five daughters and the TikToks that she does teaching us about her life as an Orthodox Jewish woman? Yes. Are her children the greatest comedy performers that we have right now? Louis, if you could see Masudi get dragged across the ground by her sister, like, you would understand what real comedy is. But then this other lady who reposts her TikToks and so that she can make money from them, but it's not her. And then I'll just be in a run of like five different, you know, here's all the kosher food that my toddler ate in a day, and then realize that I'm paying money to someone else who is stealing from Miriam. That is not okay.
Oh, sure.
Like, this is a woman who has done so much to popularize baby wrapping and wearing in America and you know, promoting and exploring Orthodox Jewish life for a broader audience. It's so much fun. Like, so many people I know, Lindy West, also a huge fan. That baby has so much hair. But... lady who is trying to steal from Miriam, you can keep it. I don't need, like, your detestable ways of stealing by reposting are offensive to me, and I will try harder to pay attention to what account I am looking at when I am watching those girls in their Purim costumes.
That is a bit of a chore to have to, like, is this her or the doppelganger? Like, who's actually posting this? I am a big, constant critic of people who are monetizing things online they should not be.
Yes.
I cannot stand, for example, when somebody posts screenshots of a television show and then just posts the quotes from the television show, and then they put it on their account, and then that gets the likes.
Yeah.
That should be actionably against the law.
Well, and there are like so many complexities about people posting their children, and I understand people having like many emotions about that, and I understand and respect when people don't feel comfortable doing that. But I also have such a feeling of warmth and adoration towards all five of Miriam's daughters. And, like,
I have never heard of this person. You're talking to me like we all hang out with Miriam.
No, but the thing is like, these are the weird niches that we have where, like, this is a person who has millions of followers and most people don't know who she is, but then you find out this other person. It's just like, I mean, the fascinating thing of going on Instagram and following a hot guy and then seeing which of your friends follow that hot guy.
Oh, because okay.
This is their taste in hot guy. Well, this is my taste. Like, I don't want to watch a woman who is, my children have never had Oreos, so I'm going to make them Oreos from Emmerwheat. I will watch that woman, but that doesn't give me joy. Miriam going to a Passover program where she and her family are going to have all of their Passover needs taken care of them for them by catering over the course of a week with a water park. Yes, I want to watch that.
Okay. I was just thinking, are there anybody like that? I do. There's an interior decorator influencer named Caroline Winkler I really, really like. Because I am so envious of interior decorators. How do they know what's going to fit in a space? Why do they like measuring things so much? I don't have that instinct.
Are you good at that stuff?
No, I really admire it. Yes. It's honestly like having a fashion sense, like, you know?
Yes, and you generally have a good fashion sense, but I would also say that you play a minimalist game. And so...
Yes, I'm what I call a gray man. Yes. I like to dress presentably, but, you know, I'm not here to like make a statement.
Let's be honest, so much of your fashion work is just shoulders and arms these days.
Yes, and excuse me, a clavicle. Which used to be a funny comedy word, but now we have clavicular, so it's all over.
I know. It's very
sternum. I'll change it. Sternum will be my comedy word
now. I mean, but the clavicle is magical.
Yes.
he doesn't get to own
Thank you for that Seussical-like observation.
Thank you.
Yes. My keep it this week. I saw a tweet that I just thought was provocative. I'll read it here. It is... I think Dua Lipa has a moonstruck 1987 in her, but the writer-director stars would have to align in inconceivable ways. People really are just underestimating what Cher can do.
Yeah.
That is a complete pop culture one-time thing that Cher, who was, you know, a beloved singer, variety star, icon, then waded into acting in a dominant alpha way, and we all bent towards her. Of course, she was in the movie Chastity in the 60s, but then in the 80s, we got her in Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, one of my favorite all-female dramas. She was then in Silkwood with Meryl Streep. And then a few years later, after The Mask snub, she was nominated for the Best Actress, Oscar for Moonstruck, and won it. Couldn't have been anybody but Cher. I can't picture anybody in that role. But do you know what this tweet made me think of that upsets me in terms of a pop star not turning into an actor? How are we not getting the fucking Adele rom-com?
Oh.
Adele, to me, is the prime example of somebody who should also be acting, because whenever she gives an interview, talks, the patter between songs at her Las Vegas residency, this woman is always funny.
Have we not had this conversation? One of my great regrets in life is that Adele's career will never be bad enough that she has to host a game show.
Yes.
Because the thing is like, Adele could. Like, Adele has the level of sincerity required to host a cooking show, which is
right.
The greatest level of sincerity possible. We've discussed this with Valerie Bertinelli. But, like, Adele hosting a game show would just make me so happy. Like, she has that human touch. She has that sincerity. Adele crying when Celine Dion is in the audience is just that moment that you know she could really bring to something. And yes, like, Adele really could act. You need the right director with her to steer her in the right direction. I think one of the hardest things for these big stars is going onto a set and being in a place where they can be guided in the right
yes.
direction. And I think it was the wonderful thing about Cher on Silkwood being with Mary Louise Streep.
Yes.
Like,
with Mike Nichols, who is the director of all time,
and
actor's
like,
director.
And, like, both of these people are people you're gonna fucking listen to and you're gonna watch. And, like, she grew out of that, like, so amazingly and gave us so much. And it's not something everyone can do. A lot of people have taken stabs at that transition and it hasn't happened. But, like, first we would need to make a rom-com again.
Right.
But
I'm sorry, I know I'm living in the fantasy world.
I know, but, like, Adele has that in her and I want that from her and out of her, because like what we get on Graham Norton is so
that's what I mean, it's painful. Why are you acting like an awesome actress
yes.
outside the with other actors
yes.
who are treating you like an actor? Basically Graham Norton certainly does.
And
I will say, by the way, we are getting a movie with her. She's going to be in Tom Ford's Cry to Heaven, which is based on the Anne Rice book. I don't know how this fits with Adele, why it's going to be Adele. I'm encouraged by that. But, like, I hope the charm quotient is what I want, because I'm so upset with this in a guys – in like a, we haven't tapped into some pop culture geyser we could be getting.
The thing is like – A Single Man was a great movie. Like,
yes.
I don't know that a Tom Ford film is the best vehicle for what she's bringing to the table. But I would say what Tom Ford is bringing to the table is somebody who is a big enough identity to be able to tell Adele what she needs to be doing that
yes.
she may not realize.
She trusts him.
Yes.
Yes, right. No, I hope we get something. I mean, like, she almost could be a stand-up.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, like, it like intersong patter is one of the greatest art forms.
Yes. No, and it's like I saw Patti LuPone in concert recently,
yes.
and she, during her patter, and of course Patti is marvelously funny,
yes.
I was still hearing the Bruce Valanche, and by the way, he was in the theater, so I know he was writing those jokes.
Yes.
Adele, I get the feeling she's kind of penning it herself.
Okay, I would like to make an argument. I think we should nationalize Paul Feig. I think we need
yeah.
to understand that Paul Feig is a resource, and like he can't just be going where he wants to. He, like, like we need
in his dotty little suits,
right? We need him focused on taking the ladies who we want comedy out of and getting proper comedy out of them.
Yeah. I'm just saying, this is a project we could all be working on.
Yes.
I feel like Adele only does things she really, really wants to do,
yes.
only puts on music when she really, really wants to.
Right.
And I just think in this atmosphere where we're living right now, we need to be screaming at her.
Or like a Phoebe Waller-Bridge. If Phoebe Waller-Bridge...
No, don't even bring her up. Where is she? She's got that fucking husband who I'm sure wants to do whatever with her. And she's like, I'm going to keep writing for Amazon. And they're going to keep not making the show. And I'm going to keep getting paid.
But like if Phoebe Waller-Bridge decided to do a big, broad comedy with Adele, I mean...
Pain. I can't believe you would even say that. The atmosphere in the room has changed. The idea that this woman would roll along and cut off Julie Louis-Dreyfus's Emmy streak, and I'm like, exactly right. She deserved it.
Yes.
What? And then she's like, and now I'm going to disappear. Enjoy the Banshees of Inish Sheeran by my husband.
Can I ask you one other question that is seemingly unrelated, but is it all right for Richard Curtis to be in repose?
Like, I know.
Do we need to pull him out in some way? Like... Honestly, our British Paul Feig.
Yes. Richard Curtis has written like every delightful little comedy.
Yes.
He's like About a Boy and stuff, right? No, not About a Boy?
No.
It's Hugh Grant-y stuff.
Four Weddings and
yeah,
a Funeral,
yeah, yeah.
Notting Hill, that kind of thing.
And you know that I think the greatest anybody has ever looked in the 1990s is Kristin Scott Thomas in Four Weddings and a Funeral. Honey, that was a bob.
Like,
and a bob should be dark.
What he does with that ensemble, in both that and Notting Hill, that Kristin Scott Thomas maybe has less than 10 lines.
Yes.
But she's an indelible character in that film.
Speaking of shoulders.
Ugh.
Ugh, God, I fucking love her.
at the Emmys 2 years ago, I wanted to talk to Jodie Foster, and I had to go through Kristin Scott Thomas. And
that's how life is. That's how life is.
Kristin Scott Thomas does not like me.
Wow, really? Oh my God. I always think about how when Cate Blanchett came along, that totally waylaid Kristin Scott Thomas.
It really did. It is interesting things like that. Like, as you know, I love Anne Bancroft too much. And yes. Olympia Dukakis really was just like, no. These, Mediterranean old lady roles are going to go in another direction for the next 10 years, Anne Bancroft.
I'm the rankled one now.
Yes.
Guy Branum, thank you so much for joining us today, as always.
Thank you so much for having
me. Oh, my God. The conversation would never be the same without you. Where can we find you on social media, if perhaps I'm looking?
Okay. I am at Guy Branum across all social media. Also, my solo show, Be Fruitful, is going to be in Provincetown.
And you must see this man live. Guy is a brilliant comedian.
June 5 through 7. I'm going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival for all of August. So if any Keep It listeners are going to be at the Fringe Festival,
Ooh. They
should buy tickets to my show. Their link in bio. And also, go see Stop That Train in theaters and or the last two episodes of Hex in HBO Max. That I promoted a lot there, Lois. I realized that was a lot.
You did a great job.
But I knew that you could take the load.
Also, but beautifully said. Also, you just brought up Europe, and I want to add congratulations to Bulgaria for winning Eurovision. It's a fraught year, so I wasn't as invested.
Yes.
But can you name the one Oscar nominee ever born in Bulgaria? An actor.
Oh, it's not. I'm going to say it was that lady who was in Zorba the Greek.
Oh, no. Lila Kadrova. Good guess. The correct answer is Maria Bakalova from Borat 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But also Rita Wilson's father, a Bulgarian Greek. Let us never forget.
Oh, yes. That's true. One time somebody was like, we have to go to a birthday party before we hit the bars. And we went. It was just a WeHo apartment. And it was Maria Bakalova. What?
Oh.
Seems nice. I met that actress Victoria Pedretti. Brilliant. Anyway, thank you to the tremendous Mandy Moore for joining us. She will be back because I will be angry otherwise. Thank you to Guy Branum for being here. We'll be back in 2 weeks after the long holiday with more Keep It. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Rustin, Kelsey Gante, Kendra James, Lindsay Gomez, and me, Louis Vertel. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, Mia Kalman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Are you looking for a safe space for your secret celebrity opinion?
Do you need someone who understands your latest internet obsession?
We're a pair of decade-long best friends who connect over fussing
and discussing
all things pop culture.
We're your first stop after that TMZ push alert. From Higher Ground Audio, I'm Peyton Dix.
And I'm Hunter Harris.
And this is Let Me Say This. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.